Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of Timber the Hoop Podcast. I'm your co-host, Coach Babels, a.k.a. J-Babes. Here, as always, we Kings. What is going on, my guy?
Yeah, man, doing good. Enjoy some good games this weekend. It was fun weekend of playoff hoop, but, you know, we'll get into the refs part of it.
That's going to be discussed at some point. Let's start with the game that just ended a nightcap tonight. 76ers tied things up with the Miami Heat with the 116-108 victory. Obviously, the story is Joel Embiid pretty much just changing everything this series once he came back. But you have to give James Harden credit. Vintage game, 8 of 18, 31, 9, 7. Got to the free throw line 10 times. It was just special, man. He got going against an elite defense. Nothing to take away from this. That was a big performance. When Miami tried to claw back, it was him making the plays late to close. Big game, James Harden. Probably one of his most impressive playoff games in recent memory. So what do you think about this series? Also, I want to give you credit because you did pick Philly to win this series when they got down 2-0. It was bleak, but Embiid came back, and it looks like everything is changing. So talk to me about this series.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like you saw, like, the first two games, Bam was getting busy, like, you know, Miami wasn't too impressive the first two games. Bam was getting busy, opened up a lot for 3-point shoot. I mean, they did shoot better the first two games than they did these next two. But I think for me, it was like you saw the biggest difference was defensively. And I think that's what that's why people have Embiid high as MVP. And we keep telling people Embiid is light years better defensively, or not light years, maybe, but too extreme. But he's significantly better defensively than Jokic. Because it's beyond the analytics in terms of, like, you know, measuring, you know, points saved and all that, you know, deflections, et cetera, defensive ratings, et cetera, things like that, plus minuses. It's when you look at the tape, when you look at the schemes defensively, you see what Embiid does, like, in a slow down game in the playoffs, harder to score. You have to respect his presence inside. You know, your interior front line guys can't just bully their way inside. You saw Bam. Looked like Patrick Ewing first two games, came in game three, was 9 points on like 2 of 9 or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, that's just immediate impact on the defensive end. And then offensively, you see what you saw in the fourth quarter of this game. The Tobias Harris play was like the whole, like, you know, the microcosm of what having him be on the floor was. Literally, you saw Jimmy Butler, like, or whoever was on his side, literally leave it. They go help somebody else stop Embiid from touching the ball. Like, it wasn't even to help Embiid when he got the ball. It was stopping Embiid from even catching the ball. And that led to Herrera's run down the baseline, and Maxey found him for an alley-oop, easy dunk. Like, just his presence alone is just making everything easier for these guys. And we were talking kind of a little bit before, but I'm at the point where I'm elevating Embiid to that point because he's not healthy yet. Like this is probably, you know, I don't like using percentages, but this is probably 75%, you know what I mean, Embiid? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Something like that, and look at the impact he's having. This is amazing stuff I'm seeing from him. Like, his evolution of his game. I remember you made the comment last year. You said, "Embiid's in his prime. You just have to just go for the big fish. You can't waste it." And I thought to myself, "I don't know if he's that good." Nah, he's that good. He's that good. Because I was looking, I was like, "Man, if Harden was just even 90% of himself, they walk to the finals with the way Embiid, how good Embiid is. Like, he's really that good." And I'm gonna give Harden one more offseason, bro. It looks like he's getting healthier. I'm gonna give him one more offseason, bro. I'm gonna give him one more offseason because Philly can really win a chip. Because Maxey's also great. He's great.
Yeah, That those are great 76er points. I 100% agree. I think the thing with James Harden, which is going to favor the playmaking, is always going to be there.
Oh yeah, always.
The passing going to be there. So I think that's, you know, that's kind of his saving grace. Even as he loses a little bit of athleticism, he'll still be effective from that standpoint. My thing is on the Miami side. We talked about this a little bit back and forth on the timeline, me and you, but they were the number one 3-point shooting team in the NBA percentage wise in the season. It's been awful in the playoffs. Even the series they won, it was below 30%. But the Hawks aren't that good. This series, like tonight, 7 for 35. And there's something to the point you said about a lot of times, you know, there's expecting drop-off. That's 100% true, especially for role players. But The quality, and Spo even said this post-game, the quality is good. The quality, shot quality is good. So their adjustment has got to be, you know, to make shots. And then to your credit also, why you never really believed in Miami, because I can't believe in a team who depends on Tyler Harrell night to night. And that's proven to be true. I mean, he's 4 of 12 tonight, 1 of 5 from 3. My biggest adjustment for Miami is, you know, make your open shots. And B's going to be a handful regardless because he's that great. Just got to make him work the most you can. I mean, he's 7 for 13 tonight. They fouled him a bunch. He got 13 free throws. But how you help yourself out is you keep yourself in the game by making your open shots. You know, 7 for 35 from 3, that's hard to overcome in today's NBA, especially when – Philly on the other end is 16 for 33 and extremely efficient. You talking about minus 27 at 3-point line in the playoff game. That's just tough to overcome, you know, over the course of the contest.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the issue though. Like we talk with these 3-point shooting teams, man, like at some point, like somebody was tweeting me at some point, and like, I've said this many times, at some point, the variance just hit. And I've said this for years since I was in high school. At some point, the variance just kicks in and you start missing. Like it's like, you're not going to hit all year. And that's why you need – and this is why everybody preaches the gospel about the in-between game, the mid-range game, right? Because at some point when those three stop falling, you need a counter. You need something else that's going to, you know, be able to give you offense and keep the defense honest to keep those driving lanes open. And that's the thing with the Heat is, like, one – and Rich brought this up. They're one of their best three-point shooters doesn't play. He's not playing. So, I mean, you're already at 3-point deficits. You're not hitting your open shots, and you're not playing when your best 3-point shooter is because you're afraid he can't guard. So you're already at a deficit right there. And two, like I said, you're relying on Tyler Harrell to be your second best scoring option. Like, I'm sorry, when the 3-pointer is not falling, if that's the guy you need to rely on to go get you tough buckets to win a playoff series, I'm not rocking with it, at least not right now. Maybe he'll get to that point, you know what I'm saying, where he turns into Kiki Vandeweghe or something and starts averaging 27 a night. But right now, I can't trust Tyler Herro to be that guy, man.
You know, and you've been on that. Even Miami was, you know, number one in the conference. You've been saying it for day when playoffs come, he's not reliable. So kudos to you on that. You still got Miami in 6, or you got still? I know that was your pick before.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I had Miami in 6 because of the Embiid, but like,
so yeah, Philly. So you got Philly in 6. I remember you had Philly in 6 in our preview playoff. You picked Philly in 6.
Yeah, I had Philly in 6 with Embiid, and I said Miami was going to be in 6 if Embiid doesn't play, but you know, he's back, and like I said, it was all on his health. I think I'm going to stick to my original thing, man. I said if Embiid was playing, I would take Philly in 6. And now that Embiid's here and he looks healthy, I think they're going to win in 6 games. I can see James having another build-upon game in game 5, and then Maxey bringing him home in game 6, and Embiid will just be constant throughout. So that's what I got. I mean, like I said, if Embiid wasn't here, if Embiid wasn't playing, or if Embiid was super, super compromised, like, you know, kind of like Ibaka when he came back for OKC against the Spurs.
I'll be over.
Yeah, it'd be over. You know, I would just completely go with Miami in 6 at most. But Embiid looks good enough to play and impact the game, so I got Philly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Moving on, the game earlier today, that was Phoenix and Dallas series, all of a sudden became super interesting. Dallas holds home serve. He got it done again. I think the impressive part of this for me, Luka was not even efficient. Luka was 9 for 25, 1 for 10 from 3. But Dorian Finney-Smith, 8 threes, 24 points. Bertans, 12, 4 threes. Kleber, 11. Dinwiddie, 10. Brunson, 18. And a lot of shot creation. Probably Dallas's best team effort of the series so far. Ironic stat, when Luka scores over 30, Dallas lost both games. When Luka scores under 30, they win both games. I think there is something to that. Man, this series, second straight Chris Paul, rough game. Fouls tonight, again, 5.7 assists. Could not get involved in the game too much, just fouls. Picked up the one at the end of the half. Picked up the one early, trying to bait a guy into a foul. Actually dribbled into a guy, and they gave him offensive foul. Thank you, refs. That call needs to stay that way. Now keep it consistent. That's the right way to call that. So it's interesting reading, talking about these series where the first four games, both home teams win. So obviously the advantage, ideally the advantage would be with the home team. But has anything schematically changed for you these last two games to lead you to believe that Dallas could go steal one in Phoenix and possibly pull off this monumental upset?
Yeah, I think I tweeted somebody. I think for Dallas to be able to beat a team like Phoenix at home, who has, like I said, Phoenix has really good role players, and role players always play good at home. You're definitely going to need that Luka magic game, which he'll definitely be able to give you a 40-point game. I mean, he's young. He's got them figured out. He knows they can't stop him. So I think he'll be able to give you a 40-point game. But what you're really going to need is you're going to need Brunson to come in and help and be that guy, because it's going to be hard on Herod on DFS to give you 20-something. It's going to be hard to rely on Spencer to, give you a good Spencer game. Maybe he does, maybe he remembers he has more talent than how he plays and he gives you 20. But I think Brunson's the guy. Luka gives you 40, Brunson's got to give you that 25 plus, and everybody just feed off them and contribute here and there. Kleber hit some timely buckets here and there. Have DFS hit some timely buckets. Have Bullock or Bullock, as he's going by now, as they pronounce it, hit some timely buckets. So, it's going to be on Brunson and Luka. And I think highly of Brunson now. I know we had our guy on. He was kind of iffy on whether Brunson would really be that second tier. And I agreed with him at the time of that being iffy. But, I look around the league and I look at how Brunson's playing right now. And I look at, the cost of certain guys' salaries and what it would cost to get them. And for me, I'm just like, man, roll it with Brunson and believe in Brunson, because he can play. And I think Brunson's the type who's going to give you 25 plus. He can give you 25 plus on a big road game. He has skill, he has game, and Luka's going to get the attention, and Brunson, I think, can take advantage.
Yeah, I agree. I think the most likely scenario for Dallas to win, or the most, the one that's realistic, is, all these guys aren't going to play well in Phoenix. I think Brunson's the one who can probably, get going on the road for you and give you a chance. I was just shocked at how, non-competitive the first few games were, at the first couple games were at times. I think in game two, Dallas made a run late, but the fact that they adjusted. My thing for me for Phoenix is, I think they kind of got away from the defensive game plan, which is to kind of let Luka cook. I saw a lot of extra help and rotating coming. They were just giving up a lot of open threes.
Yeah.
That was interesting to me, that switch after winning two games. I think maybe they got scared about what happened at the end of game two, possibly. I don't know, but Luka's such a good playmaker. I think they got to mix up their coverages. The guy with that great, I think you can't give him the same look, whether it's letting him go one-on-one or sending help. You just got to mix it up and hope you can to throw him off a couple times, because guys that great, they get the same look, they basically figure it out, and you're cooked. I originally picked Phoenix in six. I'm going to stick with that. I think Phoenix figures it out, but Chris Paul's play is concerning me. I got to say, shout out to Dwight Powell and a couple of the other bigger guys on Dallas. They're doing a great job of taking away the mid-range from Chris Paul. They were letting him walk into it the first couple of games. The last two, he comes off the screen, a hand is there. And they're making him, you know, score over length, which is kind of his kryptonite. You know, they'll let bigs get on him. If you're going to make him score over length and try to attack him, especially in his older age where he doesn't have the same burst he had. And, yeah, I think Phoenix has to get, you know, Mikal Bridges back online. He only had 6 points today. You know, he's their, you know, quote unquote, you know, maybe not their third star, Aiden is, but he's a guy who can score double digits, and Aiden's got to be more dominant. 14-11 looks okay. But I think you said before this series, if he's not over 20 in these games, this series is going to go longer. And just another kind of lackluster performance, and I agree with you there.
People keep asking me, why do I say 25-plus? Just look at them. Look, bro. Like, just look. Like, every time he's dominant, he's scoring, he's making himself a threat. The other team is scrambling. They don't know what to do. They have to send help to him. And now your other guys are cooking. Like, if he's going to be playing rim runner role, playing like Tony was saying, the JaVale McGee role, essentially, like, I mean, you're going to be in trouble. Like, you're going to be in trouble because now you're predictable. It's just Book and CP3. And you know what I mean? Like, you funnel CP3 into the lane because he's old. Now Book has to play hero ball. You know what I mean? And I love Book. He has great game, but he's not Kobe. You know what I mean? He's not going to be able to win you a game by himself. I mean, not a game by himself. He's not going to be able to win you a series. You know what I mean? Playing hero ball. Like, he's not on that level. You know what I'm saying? He'll win you a game in here, but he's not on that level. So, yeah, man, Aiden needs to dominate.
I think that's the X factor, how he plays at home. They got to get him going offensively. I still don't believe, you know, Powell, Kleber, and, you know, Bertrand, those were fine players, but there's no way they should be able to contain Aiden if they use him right. And I think Phoenix is kind of really caught up in attacking matchups now instead of just playing. And I think, you know, it may be affecting the amount of touches that Aiden is getting.
Yeah, I think they're too hell-bent. And this is why Jason Kidd told Luka to participate. They're too hell-bent on trying to go after Luka. And since Luka's now competing and trying to move his feet and play within the team scheme, now Dallas has adjusted to that. You know what I mean? Like you said, they need to stop trying to hone in on that and just play ball. Like, you have a big who's supposed to be dominant. Use him. You know what I mean? Use him and let him make the game easier for your perimeter guys.
All right. Moving on to Saturday's games. Let's go with the late winner first, the blowout first. We get the Warriors absolutely thrash the Grizzlies. Another hotly contested series based on the off-the-court chatter as well as on-the-court antics. Honestly, Grizzlies got out to a hot start. The Warriors, once the Warriors got traction, it was over, though. 17-32 from three, shot 60% of the team. Just a nasty offensive display. It was like a better basketball offensive NBA offense clinic out there. Kuminga 18, Wiggins 17, Steph 30, Clay 21, Poole again 27, proving himself to be a star. Memphis could get nothing going pretty consistently outside of Ja. He had 34-7. However, the bad news is Taylor Jenkins said today he will most likely miss Game 4. There was really no good news. I think, you know, Desmond Bane did hit 4 threes, look somewhat of his normal self. He doesn't look right. Man, my Memphis and 7 pick is looking real janky right now. It's just you got to defend in the playoffs. You can't have a game where you're giving up open look after open look. I think the issue is they couldn't defend at the point of attack, and then Steph and Poole were just in attack mode, and it was just shredding their defense. On top of that, you got all the Warriors off ball movement on top of being attacking the ball. I think this is probably the best balance the Warriors struck between running Steve Kerr's All Lives Matter offense and letting the stars cook. This is probably the best balance they struck all series, in my opinion, with that. So, obviously, if Ja can't go, you pretty much think Memphis is cooked. But what do you think they got to do in Game 4 to make this at least competitive? Because that was not a competitive basketball game at all. They will get Dylan Brooks back. He will help defensively at least. So what does Memphis need to do in Game 4?
Well, I mean, that's the point. They got to defend.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can't defend, you can't get stops, you're not going to win. They got defend off ball, on ball. They got and this is where I think, and this is why I think they're done. They got defend with poise and experience and IQ, and they just this is where the youth comes in. They just haven't been there. They don't have the experience. They don't have. I don't think they know how to adjust on the fly to certain looks defensively. That's why they prefer to run up and down. You know what I mean? Just be right. Just be with a go with the flow type of team. Because I don't think they're ready to in the half court to look at that. Okay, this action is coming here. We need to be here. Like, I don't think it's on the string. Like I said, Jaren Jackson Jr. almost fouls out almost every game because he hasn't learned to control how he, you know, his motor defensively, which is funny, right? Because this is a guy who, you know, we question in terms of his motor in the inside, and now he don't know how to play with his motor when it comes to contesting shots and playing defense. So it's, you know, it's they're just young. They're young and they have to go through the lumps. You hate that it had to be this way because it's a lot of taken away from the actual series and the game. But you know, I just don't think there's anything really they can do. I mean, this is a team that shouldn't have made out the first round. Like that's how I view them. You know,
yeah. I think the most disappointing thing for me was their inability to dominate the glass. Like, the Warriors are getting away with playing some criminally small lineups, and they can't get Jackson and then Tillman and Brandon Clark and Anderson to dominate the boards. And I got to give the Warriors credit on that, because every time out when the mic is on, first thing Steve Kerr is just like, all five, all five, all five. He knows they're small, and he's putting it in their head, all five have to rebound. And I'll say this, there's a lot of threes going up, and what that means is long rebounds, so the guards have to rebound a lot more for him. And I think, you know, Ja 3, Bane 3, you know, Tyus Jones 1, DeAndre Melton, you know, 4. Those guards got to rebound better if they're going to be a lot of threes going. They got to stop leaking out, because the Warriors are just generating way too many quality looks with their second shots. And on top of that, the Memphis is not getting enough second looks themselves, and it's killing them, because the next step out of desperation is, I know what it is, they're going to try to put Steven Adams on the floor, and it's going to be ugly. So I have Memphis at 7. It's looking bleak. Do you think Memphis wins another game?
Maybe game 5. I hope.
If Ja plays, of course.
You know what I mean? I think Coach Rikki G had a good point. The fact that he didn't get an MRI, he's playing. I think they're trying to, like he was saying, they're trying to milk the situation, kind of, you know, put pool in the hot waters with the league office. But if you don't get the MRI, you know what I mean? If you don't get that type of thing, if it's a knee type of situation, if you don't get that looked out, you're probably good enough to go.
I was just going to say, like, it didn't sound like they were set on him not playing. It was like, probably won't play. I think they're going to take that injury report fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to try to, you know, mess with the league office. This is weird to me, man. Like, I enjoy the Grizzlies playing, but they're complaining, man. Like, accusing guys of diving at legs, breaking code. I mean, it's the NBA playoffs. Guys are going to play harder. I tweeted this. You know, when a guy dies on the ground, it's not dirty every time. Every time a guy dies on the ground, well, it's dirty. I was like, do you understand that there are players who want to win?
Right.
But it's loose ball. It's been proven that every possession matters in a playoff game. The average score in a playoff game is like a 5-point difference. So every possession matters. So guys are going to dive on the floor. Like, there's money on the line. You get paid more the more you advance. You know what I mean? So, that's probably the most bothersome thing to me about the discourse. Every time somebody dives on the ground, we got to have a video synopsis about why it was dirty. I think what it is, super slow-mo and HD, I think it's kind of, you know, trying to figure out the word. It's kind of like
– it distorts attention.
It's distorting what people view as, because they understand, okay, you see it in super slow motion in HD, but a guy is processing that in real time in NBA player speed,
right?
Whether to dive for a ball or not. So it's easy for you to sit there with 20/20 hindsight and a rewind button on your phone. You know what I mean? So, like, that's probably the most frustrating thing to me about the discourse, calling guys dirty.
Yeah, like the pull thing in slow-mo looks bad, right?
Yeah.
And the game speed is probably like, oh, I'm kind of go for the ball. The ball's not there no more. It's like, oh, you know, all of a sudden I'm hitting his knee. You know what I mean? Because I mistimed my steal and now I'm hitting his leg because the ball's not there no more. You know what I mean? So it's like, man, it is annoying. I think it wasn't just the Warriors game too. It was with the Celtics Bucks game. That's another game where we're seeing a bunch of crying from the team that's down. Like, oh my goodness, bro.
You're gonna get to that next.
But it's like, bro, like you said, not every loose ball dive is a dirty play, bro. Like you said, some guys really want to win. Some guys, they know you get paid more. Extend your career when you show teams, hey, I can be an impact player on a playoff team. That's easy vet mins. That's easy vet mins for the Wes Matthews of the world and you know what I mean, and the PJ Tuckers. When they show people that, hey, put me on your team for a vet min, we go to the playoffs, I'm going to give you good minutes. Like, come on, bro. Let's what are we doing?
Hey, and that's a perfect segue to the final game, that Boston-Milwaukee series. Giannis, obviously, is a story here, 42, 12, and 8 in 39 minutes. Milwaukee ekes by, very highly contested game. Unfortunately, the referee did come up again. So the big play I got to ask you before you, do you think Marcus Smart was taking a three, or did they call a foul at the right time? Or what was your assessment of the Marcus Smart thing before we get to the game? That was the big play. Because the last 2 minute report said that the contact happened before he went up. So the last 2 minute report actually backed up the ref's original call.
And you know what? When I watched in real time, I agreed. Honestly, when I saw it in real time, I thought that was on the ground. You know what I mean? Because like I thought, you know, Smart got fouled and then he jumped to try and, you know, try and show that, oh, I'm shooting. It's not like he jumped and then they grabbed him. You know,
yeah, it's right,
like
somebody
grabbed him and then he tried to jump afterwards, after the fact, to try and to try and get the free throw up as soon as he got touched to try and make it look like it was a shooting foul. It's the old trick that guys have tried to do before. And it's the reason why they tell you not to try a foul sometimes, depending on the points, because that could happen. It's up to the referee's interpretation. But I'm not shocked that the replay confirmed it. I think a lot of people were just wanting that game to go into OT, and you know, they're kind of biased. But like the fact that it was confirmed was good. I think that, you know, he got touched before, and he just tried to sell it to try and get three free throws. But yeah, that wasn't a real shot attempt. You know what I mean? It's kind of like people just say he was in the air and let him shoot for 3 feet. Like, come on, bro. That was not a real shot.
I got to be like, to the neck and eye, I'm going to say I thought he shot it. I'm like, damn, he was like he was shooting, but it happened so quick. And it was weird. It's one of those things. Usually you get 10 replays of everything in a playoff game. They showed it once. And I was like, wow, we usually get 100 different angles, but they only showed that once. So I understand that the league backed it up fine, whatever. The other part of this, before we get into the tactics, the other part of refereeing is, how do you feel about what you know, a lot is being said about Giannis playing football, playing fullback, da-da-da-da-da. How do you feel about the refereeing from him? A lot of pro Celtics people are complaining about how he's reffed and what he's, quote-unquote, allowed to do on the basketball court. What is your take on that?
Did they talk about sending the videotape of Jason Tatum doing LaDainian Tomlinson stiff arms?
I mean,
you saw it in the fourth. He had one on Wes Matthews. He missed point blank. Right. He got clear stiff arm. That was the best stiff arm I've seen since prime Le'Veon Bell. Like, come on, bro. Like, what are we doing here? Like, everybody playing physical. Like when my mutual said, are we playing prison ball or not? Because it was fine. It was fine when it was with the Nets being physical, roughing guys up that you were bigger than, but now you're playing the team bigger than you are, same size, who's less as physical, if not more physical, and now you're crying. Now you're crying because you don't have that advantage no more. So it's check ball, go hoop. You know what I mean? Like, stop crying, bro. And at the end of the day, they shot 17 more free throws. People want to come out here and say, oh, we put more pressure on the rim. I'm not even getting to the argument of who puts more pressure on the rim regarding a Giannis and Drew Holiday team with Lopez and Dark. I'm not even talking about who gets what inside and in interior. If you actually watch those games, there was clear missed calls on Milwaukee. I saw Brolo and Pat Connaughton get whacked, go down back to back. Nothing got called, no free throws in the fourth quarter. While Boston got 17 in that last 10 minutes, as Jab was saying. I mean, they shot 17 more.
Yeah, 17 I remember that. There was a 5 minute stretch in the fourth quarter where every Boston point came from the free throw line.
Bro, like you literally got the calls, bro. You got the calls. You know why you lost? Because your superstar didn't show up.
That's why you lost the game. That's the next thing. So what do you think is going on with Jason Tatum? After another he's two out of three games been really rough shooting-wise. He did mention a wrist injury he aggravated in this game. The weird thing for me is a lot of these are shots that he normally makes, so I wouldn't be too concerned if you are Boston. The other thing is normally a score against themselves going by going to the rim, and the Bucks are just not giving up paint points. So he's got to find a way to get going. I got to give Jaylen Brown credit. When that game was getting out of hand, him and Horford kind of wheeled it back into the game. Jaylen Brown's kind of playing really well quietly over this series. He's been their best player, if you ask me.
You wouldn't be able to tell with the way some of the C's people are talking about him. That's another topic.
Yeah, that's definitely. I think we've actually brushed over that before, but I remember Reek said, y'all need to talk about Tatum the same way I talk about Jaylen when he plays like that. So I think there is something to that. But yeah, what do you think Tatum has to do to get himself together?
That's what Otto was saying on Twitter. Hit the mid-range. That's it. If you're not hitting the mid-range, you're not gonna get open because they're not gonna give you paint points. You know the threes, the step back threes. You know the variance in those. You gotta hit what they're giving you, the in between. That's really it. He just has to hit the in between. He has to play composed and he has to make his open layups. That one and defensively he has to compete better. I think that one play against Drew Holiday, I mean, he flopped so horribly. You almost could have called that an and one. How bad. Like he tried to sell that contact, bro. So like he needs to compete on both ends better. That's really what it is. And offensively, like hit the in between. I think he can hit it. He has a nice jumper, but I don't know if that's something he's confident in enough to seek it out and to make them have to guard that.
Yeah, to that point, it's weird because his shot profile. I remember this thing where they used to get on him for taking too many middies, and then he completely changed his. His play style became, you know, a threes and buckets, and threes and layups kind of guy. He used to take the mid range a lot more than what he does now. So that's interesting how, you know, the pendulum has changed. I think the main thing we're talking about is having a balance.
Yep.
You gotta have a balance. But yeah, so I'm looking in the playoffs, the field goal percentage. Yeah, man, it's you know, he's 21% from 3 to 10 feet, 36% from 10 to 16. He's shooting 50%. From 16 feet to 3 points. So, you know, he has made them when he's taking them. He just got to take them more when they're there. So the last thing I want to talk about. So there were fans and coaches and people on both sides talking about, you know, feeling lucky about being or okay, whether you are based on how they play. You got Celtics fans saying, you know, we're fine. Tatum won't play that bad again. You got Bucks fans saying we're fine. You know, we had nothing from a lot of players. Grayson Allen didn't score. Wesley Matthews, 3 points. You know what I mean? Things like that. So, obviously, the momentum is going to go to the team in 2-1. But who do you think should feel, you know, should the Celtics feel good going into game four or what? Because you're on the road with a chance to go down 3-1. So, I think, you know, that sense of desperation kicks in or what?
I mean, if they felt good, they wouldn't be complaining as much as they are about the refs. I don't think they feel good. I think that they understand the pressure that they're in. Playing a team that's more physical than them, that's bigger than them, and I think they understand, like, on the road, if Milwaukee starts hitting those threes and you go down 3-1, it's a tough series to dig yourself out, like, out of on a team this big and this physical that wears you down. So I don't know if the team themselves feel that confident. I think because they know of the circumstances that they will be in, they're going to come out guns blazing because they have no choice. I feel like they feel probably their backs against the wall because they know how daunting it is if they go down 3-1 to Giannis and this Bucks team. I think for the Bucks, though, I think you do feel confident. Why? Because you took care of business. You won one on the road, came in game three, and you went up 2-1. And now you get to go into game four after you just missed your threes. You were at a 17 free throw disadvantage. You get to come back. Role players get another chance to play better at home where they're most comfortable. And if the role players come in, they play better, Giannis is, it looks like he's figured out how to attack this Celtics team, which is another good positive to feel good about. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough because, you know what I mean? Because, like everyone for the Celtics played last game. You know what I mean? Like, everyone played for the Celtics. The Bucks had bad role players missing. They had 17 free throw advantage, and they still lost. You know, in game one, they made 18 threes. They still lost. So the Bucks have shown they can beat them in a variety of ways.
Yeah, oh, that's a great point.
If you're the Celtics, how confident can you really feel other than we have to win? Because if you go down 3-1, it looks very bad. It's going to look very bad.
Yeah, that's a good point about the variety of ways that the Bucks.
I mean, they won starting Portis, Brooke, and Giannis comfortably, and then they won going to small. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the Bucks feel very comfortable. They can win a variety of ways. Like, they feel very comfortable right now. So I'm not sure Boston feels the same way. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't see that.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff, man. Before we get out of here, let's talk about first coaching vacancy filled. Sacramento Kings signed Mike Brown, longtime Warriors assistant, former Cavs coach during LeBron's first stint. 4-year deal in Sacramento. Hard place to turn around. A lot of culture changes needed in that place. I actually like the hire. I think Sacramento has been bad on defense for years. They needed a defense first guy tremendously. That is Mike Brown. He does bring some championship pedigree from the Warriors coaching staff. He was a part of building, you know, what they did there. How do you like the hire?
Yeah, I thought it was a good hire in the sense that Mike Brown, I think, has shown he's good enough for another chance. I do see the argument some people made of having certain coaches who failed multiple times already gave multiple chances to go back. But Mike Brown's done quality work as a coach in terms of assistant, especially from the defensive side of things. And I think that's one of the things Sac is going to need, especially with Sabonis. Getting Sabonis to be effective defensively, getting Fox to play defense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Et cetera, like getting those guys. And then obviously you have off night. So just getting those guys to play good team defense. They have enough offensive weapons to be a fun young team. They have to guard. So I think it's going to be good to give, you know, Mike Brown a chance with, you know, at the roster that has some talent. You know, the thing I think with the Kings is that I can't look at them and say they're talent deficient. Yeah, it's just how those guys fit and how they play defense on a night to night. Like, I think that's really the thing. Like, I don't think they're talent deficient at all. Like, you know what I mean? So I think with Mike Brown, it's a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, I think there's definitely to your point about, you know, another retread coach. But I think Jason Kidd, the success he's had is gonna tilt the coaching market a little bit because, oh, he was a head coach, he failed, he went to a championship environment, maybe he learned. And I think that's kind of the line of thought there. The other side of this is I have a, you know, I'm not gonna say a bad feeling. You never know until a guy does the job. We never know, he might have developed or learned something. But I just have a feeling Mark Jackson's going to be the next Laker coach. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here.
And I want Darvin Ham. I think, you know, he's modern, but at the same time, he's still an old school guy who's, you know, demands players' respect, which is kind of what the Lakers are looking for. But all the tea leaves, Mark Jackson and LeBron have affinity for each other, you know, well known. It wouldn't surprise me if Mark Jackson's the Lakers hire.
Just the stuff I'm hearing. When the Lakers right now, go Wolves.
Hey, man, I told y'all, man. When I adopted the Pelicans, it's the second team, man. Trust me, it's for my mental health, man.
Go Wolves, bro. It's the reason why I said I was transitioning full-time Wolves, man. They were already my number one team. I was with them. Clutch team, but it's like, come on, bro. You're gonna get Mark Jackson, and you're gonna try and convince yourself you can make Russ work.
Yeah, right, see, you
know. God bless. God bless, man.
Don't even get me started.
And Mark Jackson, I think, liked Russ too. That's the bad thing. So if they do get Mark Jackson, I know for a fact they're keeping Russ. I know that for a fact.
Hey, man, Zion back, baby. Zion back. Make sure you follow at It's Kings, bro, on Twitter. Myself, JJ Mabels 55 _MST. Make sure you follow, subscribe to the pod, rate us. Hit us up with content. Make sure you tap in with our live show on Wednesdays. We will be back with another live show. Those are always fun. We appreciate you guys tapping in. We will see you then. You guys be safe, and we are out of here.
Peace, y'all.